Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to you, wherever you are, and welcome to the third of our webinars on proposed changes to the IASB's conceptual framework. I'm Joan Brown, a member of the Conceptual Framework Project team, and in today's webinar, I'll be taking a closer look at liabilities and executory contracts. You can download the slides for this presentation by clicking on the Event Resources button to the left of the slides. The webinar is a recording, so I won't be able to take questions, but at the end, I'll give you links to pages of the IASB website where you'll be able to find more information if you need it. Finally, we always remind listeners that the views expressed in our presentations are those of the presenters, and not necessarily those of the IASB or the IFRS Foundation. But I'd like to emphasise this point today, because in this webinar, I won't just be talking through the proposals in the conceptual framework itself. I'm also going to be giving my own views on how these proposals could apply to a range of different transactions. My views are very much based on my own interpretation of the concepts and not on any decisions reached by the IASB. This webinar is one in a series that the Conceptual Framework Project team is recording during the comment period for the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft. Two earlier webinars are already available on the IASB website. The first provides an overview of the Exposure Draft, and the second discusses changes that the IASB is proposing to make to the definitions and recognition criteria, particularly for assets and liabilities. And today's webinar is really a continuation of the last one. I'm doing it because we received quite a lot of questions specifically about liabilities and executory contracts. Before getting to those questions, just a quick reminder of the relevant proposals in the exposure draft, starting with the proposed definition of a liability. The exposure draft proposes to define a liability as a present obligation of the entity to transfer an economic resource as a result of past events. Our last webinar explained the differences between this proposed definition and the existing conceptual framework definition. But in this webinar, I'm going to focus on a term that isn't changing, the term present obligation. The exposure draft is proposing to add new concepts to help identify a present obligation. The lack of clear concepts at present has given rise to recurring problems both for the IASB and for the Interpretations Committee, especially when they've been considering situations where a series of events has to occur before an entity becomes unconditionally required to transfer an economic resource. What we've ended up with is different standards applying different concepts with sometimes unsatisfactory results. Some standards, like the employee benefit standards, tend to apply a concept that the obligation arises as the entity receives the benefits, such as the employee service, in exchange for which it may have to transfer a resource, even if at that time the obligation is still conditional on the entity's future actions, such as meeting performance vesting conditions. But other standards apply a concept that no obligation arises until all conditions have been met. And the most notable one is the provision standard IAS 37, especially as it's been interpreted for levies in IFRIC 21. Requirements to pay levies are not treated as liabilities until the final activity occurs and triggers a requirement to pay the levy. Because identifying an obligating event has proved to be such a recurring problem, the IASB is developing concepts that it hopes will guide it to consistent requirements in future. It has spent a lot of time considering a range of different problems and gathering ideas and views. And the outcome is a proposal on the next slide. The exposure draft proposes that an entity has a present obligation to transfer an economic resource if both A, the entity has no practical ability to avoid the transfer, and B, the obligation has arisen from past events. And that means that the entity has received the economic benefits or conducted the activities that establish the extent of its obligation. Now, this means that it's not sufficient that the management of the entity intends to make the transfer, or even that the transfer is probable. One particular matter that I think these concepts would clarify is the role of economic compulsion in creating liabilities. This has been a topic of debate for some time now. Some people have argued that simply being economically compelled or having a significant economic incentive to act in a particular way does not give an entity an obligation to act in that way. While others have argued that if we ignore significant economic incentives when deciding whether an obligation exists, we will fail to report the substance of many obligations. I think that the concepts that the IASB is now proposing suggest that both groups are right. Economic compulsion must be considered. It would be a factor in judging whether an entity has the practical ability to avoid a future transfer. But economic compulsion is not sufficient on its own to create a present obligation. There must also be a link to past events. The entity must have received benefits or conducted activities that establish the extent of its obligation. Now, by focusing on the entity's practical ability rather than its strictly legal position, the proposals have two quite significant consequences. First, an entity could have a liability even if a transfer is not legally enforceable. Obligations can arise from an entity's customary practices, published policies, or statements if the entity has no practical ability to act in a manner inconsistent with those practices, policies, or statements. And these liabilities are often called constructive obligations. Secondly, an entity could have a liability even if the future transfer is conditional on a particular future action of the entity. The entity could have a liability if it has no practical ability to avoid the future action that will trigger the requirement to transfer a resource. And the entity would have a liability if it has already received benefits or conducted activities that establish the extent of its obligation. We'll look at some examples of constructive and conditional obligations. But before we do so, I'd like to talk about executory contracts. People often ask whether the signing of a contract would be an activity that establishes the extent of an entity's obligation. And if so, does that imply that as soon as an entity enters into an enforceable contract, it should recognise a liability for all its obligations under that contract? That would be a major change from existing accounting conventions. But I don't think people need to worry about this. The Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft contains a discussion of executory contracts, and it proposes concepts that I think help to explain, not challenge, existing practices. First, the Exposure Draft defines an executory contract as a contract that is equally unperformed. That could mean that neither party has fulfilled any of its obligations, or that both parties have fulfilled their obligations partially and to an equal extent. Then, the Exposure Draft proposes that an executory contract establishes a right and an obligation to exchange resources. And it proposes that the right and the obligation are interdependent and cannot be separated. So the combined right and obligation constitute a single asset or a single liability. The entity has an asset if the terms of the exchange are favourable, but it has a liability if the terms of the exchange are unfavourable. I think the important point here is that while a contract remains executory, the entity has only an obligation to exchange resources, which is a liability only if the exchange is on unfavourable terms, that is, if the contract is onerous. So, Signing a contract is not an event that establishes an obligation to transfer a resource, just an obligation to exchange resources, which is not a liability unless the contract is onerous. People often ask me about how the concepts would apply to particular transactions. So I've prepared some examples based on transactions that I'm asked about most frequently. The first example is a simple constructive obligation. An entity is preparing financial statements at the 31st of December 2000X0. The entity has an informal practice of paying employees a bonus in January each year. And each employee receives a bonus based on his or her salary for the previous year. The entity has no contractual obligation to pay bonuses, but management judged that withholding the bonuses would cause such damage to employee relationships that the costs of lost productivity would significantly exceed the costs of the bonuses. So does the entity have a liability at 31st of December 2000X0? Well, first we'd need to consider whether an obligation has arisen from past events. Has the entity received benefits or conducted activities that establish the extent of its obligation? And I think the answer is clearly yes here. The entity has received the employee services that establish the extent of its bonus obligation. Then next, we need to consider whether the entity has no practical ability to avoid the transfer. And again, I think the answer is yes. The facts are such that the economic consequences of not paying a bonus are significantly more adverse than the cost of the bonus itself. So my conclusion would be that the entity has a liability at the 31st of December 2000X0 for the bonus payable in January 2000X1. Now, this example also illustrates why the entity would not have a liability for bonuses payable in subsequent years, that is 2000X2 onwards. It might have no practical ability to avoid those bonuses too, but the bonuses would not have arisen from past events. The entity has not yet received the benefits that will establish the extent of the later bonuses. It's also worth noting that the conclusions I've come to here are consistent with the requirements of IAS 19 employee benefits. IAS 19 requires entities to recognise payments arising from informal practices if changing those practices would cause unacceptable damage to the employer's relationships with its employees. The second example is similar to example 2 in IFRIC 21 levies. This is another entity that is preparing financial statements at 31st of December 2000X0. But this entity will be required to pay a levy if it generates revenue in a particular market in 2000X1. The levy will be calculated as a percentage of the entity's revenue in the relevant market in 2000X0. Withdrawing from that market would result in lost profits far in excess of the levy. Now, during 2000X0, the entity has generated revenue in the market throughout the year. And then in 2000X1, it starts to generate revenue in that market again on the 3rd of January. Does the entity have a liability at the 31st of December X0 for the levy that will be payable if it generates revenue in 2000X1? Well, first we need to consider whether the past events criterion is satisfied, and I think it is. The entity receives the benefits that establish the extent of its obligation as it generates revenue throughout 2000X0. Then next, we'd have to consider whether, as those past events occur, the entity has no practical ability to avoid paying a levy. And I think I'd judge that at the time it generates revenue in 2000X0, the entity has no practical ability to leave the relevant market, so it has no practical ability to avoid the levy. And applying the proposed concepts to this example would lead to a liability being accumulated and an expense being recognised gradually over the course of 2000X0. Now, some of you might realize that this outcome is not consistent with the existing requirements in IFRIC 21. The consensus in IFRIC 21 is that a liability to pay a levy arises only when the event occurs that triggers payment, which in this example means that a liability would be recognized for the full amount of the levy at a single point in time on the 3rd of January 2000X1. Now, an inconsistency between IFRIC 21 and the proposed concept does not mean that requirements for levies would necessarily change if and when the IASB finalized these proposals in the exposure draft. The conceptual framework does not override specific standards, and the IASB will not necessarily change existing standards as a result of changes to the conceptual framework. But if the IASB were at some point in the future to take on a project to amend IFRIC 21, I think the revised concepts could lead it to different requirements from those in place at present. I'll be talking about this in more detail in the last webinar of our series. Example 3 is one involving a particular type of restructuring cost. Again, we have an entity that is preparing financial statements at the 31st of December 2000X0. This entity is required by law to make one-off payments to employees if it terminates their employment. The amount depends on the length of each employee's past service. In the normal course of business, the entity rarely needs to make termination payments. However, as a result of a recent acquisition, it now has excess production capacity. It has prepared and announced a detailed plan for closing one factory and terminating the employment of all employees at that factory. So, applying the proposed concept, does the entity have a liability at 31 December 2000X0? Well, I think the first criterion is satisfied. Any obligation has arisen from past events. The entity has received the benefits, the employee services, that establish the amount that it must pay by way of termination benefits. Which means we'd have to then consider the no practical ability to avoid criterion. Now, I think that in the normal course of business, that criterion would not be satisfied. The entity rarely has to pay any termination benefits, which means it must have a way of avoiding them, maybe by transferring employees to different parts of the business. So, in the normal course of business, the entity wouldn't recognize a liability for future termination benefits. However, in this example, an acquisition has resulted in surplus production capacity. And so the entity is now economically compelled to reduce that capacity as cost effectively as possible. The announcement of its restructuring plan is evidence that closure of a particular factory is the most cost-effective option available, and hence that the entity no longer has the practical ability to avoid the resulting termination benefits. So I think I'd conclude that the entity does have a liability for those benefits at the 31st of December 2000X0. This analysis is slightly different from the analysis required to apply existing requirements for restructuring costs. The existing requirements, which are in IAS 37, apply only one criterion: has the entity announced or started to implement a detailed and formal restructuring plan? However, although the proposed concepts seem to suggest a different process for identifying liabilities for restructuring costs, I'm not sure that they would actually lead to major changes in requirements if they were applied in a new standard. For many restructuring costs, the past events criterion is satisfied before any restructuring activity commences. So for these costs, the announcement of a detailed restructuring plan could be the trigger for recognising a liability, because that announcement would provide the evidence needed that the entity no longer has the practical ability to avoid the costs. Example 4 is another one from IAS 37, the well-known smoke filter example. An entity is preparing financial statements at the 31st of December 2000X0. Legislation enacted in 2000X0 requires entities carrying out a particular type of manufacturing operation after 30th of June the following year to have smoke filters in their factories. The entity carries out that type of operation, but has not yet fitted smoke filters in its factory. Fitting smoke filters will be much less costly than alternative courses of action. The conclusion in IAS 37 is that there is no liability at 31 December 2000X0. And I think the same conclusion would be reached applying the proposed concept. Although it might be that the entity has no practical ability to avoid fitting the filters, I think that the past events criterion is not satisfied. The entity has not received any benefits or conducted any activities in 2000X0 that would establish the extent of its obligation. An obligation will arise when it fits the smoke filters and thus has an obligation to pay for them. Or it might arise when it operates after 30th of June without filters and may have an obligation for any fines that might be charged for non-compliance. So in other words, I think the proposed concept would lead to the same conclusions as the existing requirements for this particular example. Example 5 is an example of an executory contract, and it aims to show how an entity's obligations change as the entity progresses through a contract. So in this example, an entity earns revenue by providing repair services for a particular type of machinery. The entity provides the services under 5-year fixed fee contracts. Customers pay service fees annually at the start of each year, and the contracts are profitable. Let's consider first the obligations that arise when the entity enters into the service contract with its customer. At that point, the contract is executory. So, applying the proposed concepts on executory contracts, we'd say that the entity has a combined right and obligation to exchange repair services for cash. The terms of the exchange are not unfavourable, the contracts are profitable, so the entity does not have an obligation to transfer economic resources, and at that point, we do not identify a liability. Soon after, though, the customer pays its first annual fee, and the receipt of this fee changes the entity's obligations. It has received benefits, 1 year's fees, that establish the extent of its obligation to provide repair services. It must provide the services to which the customer is entitled for the first year. And this obligation is contractual, so the entity has no practical ability to avoid it. So it is the receipt of the fee that establishes the entity's liability to provide services for 1 year. I should note that this liability extends only to the services for the first year. The way I'd look at it is that the portion of the contract for the remaining 4 years remains executory. There would be no liability to recognise unless circumstances change and that portion of the contract becomes onerous. Example 6 is based on Example 11 in IAS 37. People often ask me whether the proposed new concepts would give a different answer in this example. The facts are simple. an airline is preparing financial statements at the 31st of December 2000X0. The airline must completely overhaul the engines in its aircraft once every 3 years, and the next overhaul will be required in 2000X1. Applying IAS 37, no liability is identified in this example because there is no obligation that exists independently of the entity's future actions. Instead of a liability being recognised, the entity depreciates part of the cost of each aircraft, that is, an amount equal to the expected overhaul cost. It depreciates that part of the cost of each aircraft over 3 years. And I think that the proposed concepts would lead to the same outcome. I'd analyse the situation as one in which each engine overhaul enhances the airline's asset. It restores the service potential of the aircraft for a further 3 years. So the obligation to overhaul the engines is not an obligation to transfer economic resources. It's an obligation to exchange economic resources. Something like an executory contract, except that the obligation is the result of legislation, not a contract. And this means, because there is not an obligation to transfer economic resources, that the entity does not have a liability, there's no need to consider the other criteria. Of course, in the 3 years leading up to the first overhaul, the entity incurs a loss as the engines wear out. But I think this loss should be recognised by depreciating a portion of the cost of the aircraft over 3 years. And then, when the airline overhauls the engines, it adds the cost of the overhaul to the carrying value of the aircraft and depreciates that cost over the following 3 years. So I think applying the proposed concepts to examples like this would not lead to any changes. Well, we've come to the end of this webinar. I hope you found it useful and that you'll return to listen to the rest of the webinars in this series. The dates on which we expect each of the webinars to be available are listed in the left-hand column, but you don't have to listen to them on these dates. They'll remain on the IASB website thereafter. In the meantime, you can find out more about the project on the Conceptual Framework project page of the IASB website. From that page, you'll also be able to submit comments on the exposure draft or register to receive email alerts about the project. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
That's fine.